Well, this is week two of our series, Comeback Stories. And this is our Easter series this morning. And this morning, I'm not going to have notes on the screen for you. So if you want to follow along in a Bible, maybe you brought one. Maybe you use your device. But there is an orange Bible in the seat in front of you. And also, if you do not own a Bible, every single week, if you don't own a Bible, you can grab that orange Bible, write your name in it, and take it home, a gift to you from New Life Church. We believe in the Word of God, don't we, New Life? Yeah, we do. So last week in our Comeback Story series, we looked at actually a series of stories Jesus told, a series of parables, parables of a lost sheep, a lost coin, and a lost son. And ultimately, what we said in this comeback story was it was about this term we like to use, and that is welcome home. And Jesus, in this parable, he had a message to those that are far from God, and in this series of parables, he had a message to those that consider themselves to be righteous. To those far from God, what we said was that God is actively seeking to bring people home. Actively seeking. This was new to them at the time. They knew that God would receive repentant sinners, but that he was seeking out the lost. That was a new concept. Also to those far from God, that finding you is God's greatest joy, and all of heaven rejoices. And that there is no doubt that Jesus welcomes returning sinners. Jesus welcomes all, which is why at New Life Church, you're welcome here. You're welcome here. And to the righteous, we learned that Jesus had a message to the righteous, which, and they were the audience of his stories. To the righteous, three things. One, don't lose your passion and compassion for the sinner. I mean, come on, New Life, let's never lose our passion for lost people. Also, we said, remember what you have. It was the older son that when his younger brother returned home, that he was angry that his father received him back. And his and he said, why would you kill the fattened calf for him when you've never even given me a baby goat? And the father said, son, did you not remember that all of this is yours? We need to remember as believers that salvation was the greatest gift we could have ever received. And if Jesus, and if God is our Father, then we actually own it all. And how can we ever complain about how he would bless other people or how he would accept and restore broken people if, let's not forget, that we have the biggest gift of all, and that is salvation. And three, to the righteous, when the unrighteous come back, welcome them home. Welcome them home. That was last week. You can get caught up, of course, newlife4kokomo.org. All of our messages are archived online there. But today I want to talk to you about crushed dreams. Crushed dreams. That you can have a comeback from having crushed dreams. Maybe some of you had a dream for your life, and now you're in your late 20s, maybe early 30s. Maybe you're creeping up on 40. Some of you are like, keep going. 50. Keep going. 60. I know my friend Don Budd is here. We'll just skip to 80. Creeping up on 90. Is Betty Gardner here? She's 90. 90 what, Betty? 93. Come on, everybody. The last founding member of this church. Did you know that? That's awesome. But maybe life just hasn't quite turned out like the dreams of your life that you had when you were a teenager. Well, there's this great comeback story in the Bible. One of my favorite stories is found in the book of Genesis, and we're going to pick up in chapter 37 in the book of Genesis. In Genesis chapter 37, we read about the life of this young man named Joseph. You've heard me talk about Joseph before. Just profoundly impactful story in the Bible, especially if you've ever felt like you've had to deal with crushed dreams. And you need to come back. You need to come back to that dream that God put in your heart. We can look at the life of Joseph. So Genesis 37, verse 12, it says, "Now his brothers, Joseph's brothers, had gone to graze their father's flock near Shechem, and Israel, their father, also called Jacob, said to Joseph, as you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, and I'm going to send you to them." And very well, Joseph replied. Verse 17, "So Joseph went after his brothers, and he found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before they reached him, they plotted to kill him." Now, there's a reason for this. It's because Jacob had 12 sons. Joseph was the baby of them all. How many of you have multiple siblings in that you grew up with or in your house, and then the baby always seems to maybe get in different treatment, maybe? I'm one of four boys. I'm second in line of four. My friend Eric is here. Are you the baby? The oldest of seven? Eight? That's a lot. And so there's contention amongst the siblings. What makes this a little worse is the father makes this preferential treatment quite known by giving Joseph, the youngest son, a beautiful coat to wear to signify, "That's my boy." To make matters worse, a little family drama background here in the story is that Jacob, he fell in love with this young lady. She was beautiful. He went to her father. He says, "I want to marry your daughter." And the father agreed. "You can marry her, but you're going to work for me for 7 years, then you can have her." And he's like, "That is worth it. I love her that much." He worked for this man for 7 years, gets married, and on their wedding night, consummates the marriage. You know, consummate the marriage. Y'all know that. In the morning when he wakes up, he rolls over, "Hey, babe," only to find her older, uglier sister. And he knew he'd been trapped. And so he went to his now father-in-law and he says, "Yo, I worked for you for 7 years for your younger daughter. But this morning I woke up and I realized what happened." First of all, like, how do you not, I mean, what was going on there that you don't know, that you don't know? And the father says, "Well, it is not our custom to marry the younger daughter before the other. But if you want to marry my younger daughter, work for me 7 more years. And to our surprise, Jacob still found that to be worth it. He worked for the man 7 more years, and now he's married to both Leah and Rachel, sister wives. And if that wasn't trouble enough, the older, uglier sister was producing children. The younger sister that Jacob really loved found herself having difficulty to have children. So now the older sister is bragging to the younger sister, "Ha ha, at least I can have kids." And the younger sister is just broken. And then God grants that younger sister to bear a child, and Joseph was born. And now you can see why Papa Jacob would put a special coat on that boy. So I worked for 14 years. I got tricked. Then my problems just magnified through this situation. and then the feud. Imagine the two wives in your ear and arguing about each other and the kids and the no kids, and then Joseph's born. What a joy, I'm sure. So he got some special treatment. So that's a little backstory to the drama. So now his brothers are out in the field working, and his father sends Joseph out to his other brothers. And this is why, when they saw him in the distance, before he reached them, they said to each other, "This is the moment we've all been waiting for. Dad's still back at the house, guys. Mom is still back at the house. We could kill him, and nobody would know. Here comes that dreamer," they said. Dreamer? Yeah, Jacob was a dreamer. God gave Jacob a dream, which made his brothers hate him all the more. And here's how the dream went. "Hey, guys, guess what? I had this dream last night. It was totally awesome. I'm standing, and you're bowing." Like, can you imagine all the older brothers looking at each other? Like, "I hate this kid." He gets the coat, and now it's getting to his head. You're standing, we're bowing. Gosh, you're annoying. Then he has another dream. "I have another dream. I'm standing, you and mom and dad are bowing." And now his father's like, "Okay, all right, it's going a little too far." And now here he comes in the field, and all of this drama and history and standing and bowing, like, there he is. Oh, he's wearing the coat today. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come, let's kill him, throw him into one of these cisterns. And then we'll just say that a ferocious animal devoured him. And then we'll see what comes of his dreams. There are dream killers among us." There's times when maybe you've even shared the dream you had. "Hey, man, God has given me this dream for my life." And people say, "I don't know. It seems a little far-fetched. When my dad got saved, he didn't grow up going to church. My dad nearly flunked out of high school because he was too busy drinking, too busy doing drugs. When he went to high school, most days drunk. He had a cousin that kept inviting him to go to church." This is during the Jesus movement. "Kept inviting him to church, kept inviting him to church. His cousin invited him to church probably nearly 20 times. And finally, out of annoyance, my dad said, 'I'll go just to shut you up.' So Grant Galloway, my dad, went to a church service and got radically saved." Radically saved. And then he felt a call of God on his life. And he made a decision that now he was going to go to Philadelphia College of Bible. And he went and he told my granddad. And my granddad he's a rough man. He's a big teddy bear. My granddad worked a factory job at DuPont, a job he hated. He hated his job, but he went every day and was faithful. He only worked for one reason: so he could buy guns and hunt. That was it. That was the... My mom is what we call her, his wife. My granddad loved two things. He loved mom, and he loved guns and hunting. So men, let that also be a message to us. Do hard things for those you love. So my dad goes to my granddad, hunter, outdoorsman. "I'm going to go to Bible college." My granddad looked at him and said, "You'll never get in. You'll never make it. This is just a pipe dream. You need to go get a job at DuPont like I did and make a life for yourself." That's crushing when people that we love say something like that. And I think that they do it in our best interest, they think. Like a parent, a grandparent, they really are trying to consider our best interest. But here's the thing, when God puts a dream in your heart, sometimes it just doesn't make sense. And you're going to have to be confident that it was God that gave you that dream. So my dad went to the registrar's office at Philadelphia College of Bible, took his high school transcript, They took one look at his transcript, and they said, Grant, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I feel like the Lord told me, because he didn't qualify for college. They said, I feel like the Lord is telling me that this is the right move for you. It was a miracle of God. When God puts a dream in your heart, and Joseph had that kind of dream, it made other people annoyed. And there will be killers to your dream. You'll have to be confident of the one that gave you the dream. He ends up in a pit because instead of being killed, his older brother Reuben shows up. And the older brother would have to take justice for what his younger brothers were about to do. He says, hey, time out. Ain't no one's killing anybody. And he's going to take Joseph back home to his dad. Well, they must have got Reuben distracted. Hey, Reuben, look over there. What's that over there? They're like, hey, hurry. I have another idea. We won't kill him, but I see some people coming. Let's sell him as a slave. At least we can get some money for him if we can't kill him. So ultimately, that's what they do. They sell him as a slave. And then all the brothers had to collaborate a story that Joseph was mauled by a ferocious beast. They took that nice special coat, they tore it up, they poured goat's blood on it, and they went back to their father. Oh, father, we don't know what happened, but Joseph's gone, a ferocious beast. You know what's also heartbreaking about that story? For 22 years, these guys kept that lie and led their father to believe that Joseph was dead. So Joseph gets sold off into slavery for 20 pieces of silver. Genesis 37:35 says, all his sons and daughters came to comfort him, the father, Jacob, but he refused to be comforted. He said, no, he said, I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave. And his father wept for him. What happens when your dreams have a setback? What happens when your dreams, like Joseph, ends up in the pits, in the cisterns where he was tossed? Well, the pits is where your current circumstances are inconsistent with the dreams that God put in your heart. God, you put a dream in my heart, but when I look around, this is not at all what I thought it would be. You're in the pits. The dream is inconsistent with your current reality. When you're in the pits, you have two choices to make. One, you can reduce your life to your present circumstances. Well, I guess I'm just a pits life kind of guy. I guess that I just have to realign the dream to be a pit. So you can reduce your life to match your present circumstances and live in the pits the rest of your days. Or you have a second choice, and that is to never allow your circumstances to change the dream that God put in your heart. I mean, watch what happens when we go Genesis now, chapter 39, verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. So his brothers sold him off to this caravan of people. They go down to Egypt, where they sold Joseph off to Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials. And just as a reminder, the Pharaoh of Egypt is the king of Egypt. And the king of Egypt, the Pharaoh, had an executive officer. His name was Potiphar, who purchased Joseph as a slave. He was the captain of the guard, Potiphar was. He bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. But listen to this. But the Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered. He lived in the house of the Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his whole household, and he entrusted him in the care of everything he owned. From the time he put Joseph in charge of his whole household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in his house and in the field. So Potiphar just left everything in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Joseph decided, I'm not going to reduce my life to the pits. I'm going to step into that dream that God gave me one day. And God blessed him. And that was a dream of the leadership that God was calling Joseph to. So much so that he began to walk out that dream in his life, even though he was a slave. And by doing so, he and his master began to prosper all the more. Because sometimes for us, if we had a setback in our dream, we would say, it must not have been from God. If we had a setback in our dream, we would likely, some of us, would turn away from it and say, it's just too hard. It's not for me. But maybe the setback in the dream is actually the setup for the ultimate comeback. And what we find is that God is not just delaying Joseph's dream. God is preparing Joseph for the dream. Genesis 39:6. Now Joseph, he was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am, and my master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How then can I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? I like what he said here. He didn't say, how could I do such a wicked thing and sin against my master who entrusted me with all of his stuff and has given me this great life instead of living as a slave and down and locked up? No, he doesn't say, how can I sin against the master? He says, how can I sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. And one day, he went into the house to attend his duties. None of the household servants were inside. She caught him by the cloak and said, come to bed with me. But he left his cloak in her hand because he ran out so fast. He ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her house servants. She said, look, this Hebrew that has been brought to us has made a sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. And when he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and he ran out of the house. That is not at all what happened. So Potiphar's wife relates this accusation against Joseph to her husband, the master of the house, who obviously burned with anger and had Joseph then thrown into the king's prison. So he was in the pits. He ended up in the palace, only to end up in a prison. And the palace is the part of Joseph's journey that demanded integrity. And what Joseph learned was, what people believe about you as a leader is not more important than your personal behavior. And he said, no. How could I sin against God? And because so, Joseph also learned that all of the prosperity that he was experiencing, although he should not have been, it was not really his own doing. He realized that he serves God, not man. It wasn't his own doing, it was the blessing of God on his life. And your choices may not be popular with every single person, but if they honor God, then you will have peace when you experience a setback to your dream. And here again, Joseph has yet another setback to his dream. So in Genesis chapter 39, verse 20, it says, "But while Joseph was in the prison," well, guess what? "The Lord was with him." And if you're experiencing a setback to your dream, the Lord is with you. He showed kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of now the prison ward. So the warden put Joseph, guess what, in charge of all the prisoners. What is going on here, everybody? This 17-year-old kid had a dream. That dream got him thrown into a pit. But he ended up in a palace. But now he's in a prison. But everywhere he goes, the dream seems to be following him. He was made responsible for all that was done in the prison. The warden paid not attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. So while Joseph was in prison then, he gained a couple extra roommates. The cupbearer to the king and the king's baker had somehow offended the Pharaoh, and Pharaoh threw them both into the prison where Joseph was. And one day each of them were just so dejected and so in such disparity. We went from serving the king to being in his prison that they each had a dream on a particular night. The next day, the two were just so in such disparity over the dream that they shared the dreams that they had with Joseph. And Joseph then, in turn, tells them that the Lord can interpret these dreams. And Joseph then interprets the dreams to the baker. He says, "The outcome is not good. It's not going to be good for you. But to the cupbearer, you will be restored to your role and to your position. The king is going to restore you back to your position." And then Joseph asked him, "Hey, cupbearer, when the king restores you, remember me. Remember me down here." Kind of like saying, put a good word in for your boy. Put a good word in for me. The dream comes true. The baker is sentenced to death, and the cupbearer is restored to his position. But Joseph finds himself in the prison. And the prison is the part of walking out the dream in our life where helping other people's dreams come true, even though you're still waiting for yours. And if you can do that, I think God sees that as a sign of strength in character and leadership. Instead of becoming bitter, Joseph decided, "I'm going to commit to making others better." He went from the pits to the palace to the prison. He refused to be bitter. And some of us, we can encounter some turbulence in our life that is seemingly insignificant to the course of our life, but will carry the bitterness along with us. How in the world could Joseph not be bitter after all this? Potiphar's wife lied. His brothers wanted him dead. He was sold as property on multiple occasions. But he never got bitter. If Joseph can't get bitter over that, then what in the world is my problem? What is our problem that we get bitter over sometimes seemingly insignificant things? But all the while he's waiting for his dream to come true, he's helping other people's dreams come true. This is the mark of mature character. Two full years goes by, and Joseph sat in that prison. He watched the cupbearer be called back to his position. He said, "Sweet, woo, ha, God's at work, man. The dream, he gave me the interpretation. He's going to put a good word in for me. Any day now. Woo! Glory to God. Any day, it's coming. 2 years goes by. How many of you have already quit? I'm still in the pits, probably. 2 years goes by. And then the king, the Pharaoh, he has a dream. And he's bothered by it. Then he has another dream. He has two dreams. And he's just so disturbed by his dream that the king calls on the wisest men in Egypt to come. And he asks them to help him interpret these awful dreams that he had. He doesn't understand. He's in turmoil over them. And then all of a sudden the cupbearer goes, "Wait, I know a little Hebrew boy." And he tells him the story about the dream and the baker. And so finally Pharaoh says, "Go see if he's still there." Sure enough, down in that prison cell, there's that Hebrew boy Joseph. Joseph comes and stands before the king. And if I were Joseph, one look at that cupbearer, boy, I ought to, 2 years, man. But Joseph's response to the king is, "Oh, mighty king, the interpretation is not mine." In other words, he's saying, "I'm not special. The interpretation belongs to the Lord." So he listened to the king's two dreams. And then Joseph said, "The Lord has the interpretation. Here's what it is. We're about to experience 7 years of plenty. The fields are going to yield multiple times more than usual. For 7 years, we're going to live blessed. We're going to be prosperous. But for the following 7 years, we're going to live in want. There's going to be a famine for 7 years. So the council kind of got together and they're like, "Okay, what we should do is we should store up for 7 years while we have plenty and save it for the famine when there's 7 years." Look, that's what we should do. This is from God. Who's going to be the one to kind of manage all of this? And Pharaoh says, "I know the guy." And he called upon Joseph. He put Joseph in charge of the plan. He put Joseph in charge of all the land. And he put Joseph in charge of his own household. And he told Joseph, a little Hebrew slave, mind you. He says, "Joseph, there is nobody more powerful in this kingdom than you, except me." Joseph was number two in the land of Egypt. Wow. 7 years of plenty. They store it up. 7 years of famine. People are hungry. They're selling now their provisions to nations all around them. And then word gets back to this family with 11 boys that are hungry. One of Joseph's brothers says to his father, "Father, we hear that Egypt has food. Send us to go convince them to buy some from them." And Jacob allows them to go. And if you know the story, the brothers show up and they say, "Oh, you know, our family are hungry and dying. We hear you have food. We brought all these gifts and treasures to purchase some grain so that we can survive." And they say, "Oh, well, you got to talk to the guy in charge. Right this way." And when the man in charge walks out, their brothers bow. And Joseph is standing. Does that sound familiar? Joseph immediately recognizes them as his brothers. And he's just gripped. He actually has to go to another room where he wept and cried. through a series of circumstances of going back and forth to make sure that Benjamin was alive. So his father had another son after him, Benjamin. He was now the youngest, because they thought Joseph was dead, but he was born of the wife that that Jacob really loved, and so it's like his full brother. And so this whole series of circumstances happens, and then he reveals himself to his brothers, and they all cry, and they hug. They can't believe he's alive. They can't believe he's in charge of Egypt, now the richest land in the area. And because Joseph had favor with the Pharaoh says, tell your family, your father and all of his descendants, come move here. Oh, give Joseph's family the best land, the best fields. And Joseph's entire family moves into Egypt, and it was their salvation. They would have starved had this not happened. It took 22 years for Joseph's dream to come to fruition. And Joseph had every good reason to quit. If Joseph would have given up on his dream, allowed the setback to bring him down, if he would have never come back from these downfalls, his family would have starved to death. If his family would have starved to death, they would have never come into Egypt, where they would have multiplied in numbers, where one day they would also be oppressed into 400 years of slavery, where one day Moses would be born and deliver them from Pharaoh, and the Red Sea was split, and they'd wander in the wilderness for 40 years with a pillar of fire, pillar of smoke, and manna in the morning, and quail on the ground. And then they would have never crossed the Jordan River with Joshua into the promised land, where the walls of Jericho would fall. And they never would have established in that land and created the people of God that by which one day a Messiah would be born in Bethlehem, who would then live the perfect life that you and I have always failed at doing. And then he died the criminal's death that you and I deserved. And being fully man and fully God, on the third day, Jesus rose from the grave. And all of this is connected to so many intricate parts of the story. But one part of that story was a 17-year-old boy had a dream. And that dream got him thrown into a pit. And he ended up in a palace only to be put in a prison. But he kept walking out faithfully the dream God put in his heart. Wow. He was part of this entire elaborate story. You know, when you first get the dream, you don't really need much motivation. You're excited about the dream. When you're at the end of the dream, it doesn't take a whole lot of motivation. Seeing light at the end of the tunnel is like, we're almost there. Where you need the most grit is when you're in the middle, when you're in the pit, when you've been thrown out of the palace, and you're in the prison, and it looks dark, and then you get a glimmer of hope. Hey, remember me when the king calls on you, and you sit for two more years. And then when you get called upon, Joseph could have done this. Yeah, let me hear your dream, but I'm probably not going to say anything because I'm bitter. Yeah, I can interpret it, but I'm not going to. Because my life has been hard. Things didn't work out the way I thought they would. Listen here, Pharaoh. I was in a pit. I was lied about. I sat in a prison, and I was forgot about. So you know what I say to your dream? Forget your dream. I'm done with this. Just put me back in my cell. And how many of us have gone about our lives and made that decision? You know what? Forget this relationship. I've tried. You know what? Forget this job. Forget this calling. I'm walking away. And we walk away on dreams because it was hard. The hardest things in life are the most rewarding. If you've experienced crushed dreams like Joseph, maybe the setback that you have faced is really just the setup for the greatest comeback story. Who would have thought? A a 17-year-old boy with a dream, 22 years later, would save the entire nation of Israel, by which one day the Messiah would come. Don't quit on your dream. Don't. This setback is a setup. It's God's preparation in your heart to mature you and develop you to handle the dream when it comes. It's not a setback. It's a setup for a comeback. And Jesus hung on the cross. It is finished. Can you imagine his loved ones in the crowd? No, 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 no. No, it ain't. Nope. It is nope, nope. And he gives up his spirit. His head hangs. A spear goes through his side and out comes forth blood and water. And it's over. This is why Thomas had a very difficult time with this news that Jesus is alive. I ain't doing that. Nope. I saw him die. He left me. He left me. Because back when all of you said, no, Jesus, don't go down there, they'll kill you, I was the one, me, Thomas, I was the one that said, if you're going to go, Jesus, I'm going to go. If you're going to die, I'm going to die. I'm going to go with you. And I watched him on that cross, and he died. So, Jesus is alive? I won't believe it. He was too hurt. But he needed to come back, and Jesus said, hey, come here, Thomas. Put your hand right here. Give me your hand. Put it in my side. Come back, Thomas. Thomas had a ministry of his own. Thomas would end up being persecuted for his faith in Jesus. And there are stories that say that Joseph would be martyred for his faith, where they tied ropes around each arm and each leg and pulled him apart with four horses because he wouldn't denounce Jesus. Doubting Thomas. Now, Thomas just needed a little comeback, a little confidence. Joseph had every reason to quit. And some of us can justify quitting because they look like seemingly good reasons. You'll be surprised what God will use to develop your dream. It's not a setback, it's a setup for a comeback. Would you stand to your feet with me this morning? All along, Joseph's story, from the pits to the palace to the prison to great prosperity, maybe new life, maybe the world has got it all wrong and their message to us. Chase your dreams. The land of opportunity. It's all good. Sure. Love it. But maybe we're not supposed to follow our dreams. Maybe if you just keep following God, your dreams will follow you. And in the pit, the Lord was with Joseph. And in the palace, the Lord was with Joseph. And in the prison, the Lord was with Joseph. So I contend with you, if we just keep following God, the dreams will follow you. 22 years to see his dreams come to fruition. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes with me today? If you're here in this place and you've experienced a setback, you can have a comeback. God is still a part of your story. I pray that you find great encouragement today to not give up. Do not quit. You are a part of God's greatest story. And we may never know the impact that our faithfulness will have on the future. You think Joseph understood the magnitude of not quitting? He just was following God. If you're here today and you say, Pastor, I need a comeback in some area of your life. Maybe it's relational with someone. Maybe it's in your marriage. Maybe it's with a child, a friend. Maybe it's a struggle at your workplace. Maybe it's financial. Maybe it's physical. Maybe it's emotional. If you need a comeback this morning, would you just lift a hand? I need a comeback. Thank you. I need a comeback. Thank you. I need a comeback. Yes. Father, I pray for every person in this room. You are just setting them up to do the hard things it takes to develop their character, develop their leadership, develop their emotions, develop them in maturity, because they're about to step into this part of the journey. Dreams fulfilled. So God, I pray for great courage in the struggle. In the middle, we need courage. Just keep going. Just keep believing. That we would remember the day that you gave us the dream. And we would have confidence that it was you who called us to it. And although we may have experienced setback, we know you provide the comeback. In Jesus' name. We're going to sing one last song together. And in the song, let's just express our need for Jesus. Our need for him. Our need for a comeback. From dreams crushed, expectations unmet, to chasing after God, and dreams will chase after you.